Good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, April the 24th, 2018, 15 minutes past the hour. Scott Spears along with you for the ride today, and we have got a great program. Want to let you know, coming up next hour, we are going to be joined by Nathan Estruth, the running mate for Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, who is a candidate in the Republican primary for governor, which is ticking down. May 8th is the date. So we will talk to Nathan Estruth next hour about the campaign, how it's going. And by the way, Mary Taylor will be in Marion tomorrow at the Republican headquarters, I believe, at 11:30 tomorrow morning. So there's some information for you. But this hour is going to be a lot of fun, because it's always fun to talk with this gentleman. You heard him this morning, and usually every Tuesday morning on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam Lepp. He is a political commentator. He is an author. He is a professor. It's always fun to welcome him to these microphones. It's been a while, but great to welcome him back. Dr. Ronald Fineman. Dr. Fineman, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Thank you so much again for inviting me.
It's good to have you on the show, because it's getting close to the date you originally predicted that President Trump would be gone. There's been an amendment to that now, has there not?
Yes, there has been, because although it could still happen, I think anything is possible, it's unlikely to happen in the next 35 or so days. So I've changed it to the thought that with 15 months gone by and the scandals surrounding Donald Trump metastasizing rapidly, much more than anyone would have thought just a few months ago, that he has 14 months more until he reaches the fourth shortest presidency, which is, interestingly, Warren G. Harding from Marion, Ohio, which I think is quite funny, and only 2 weeks longer is Gerald Ford's. And so that would mean he would be there. Harding was there 29 months, and Ford a couple of weeks longer, and I really cannot imagine that somehow that Trump's going to survive as long as June 20th, 2019, or July 4th, 2019, when he would reach Gerald Ford's tenure.
So what happened, in your opinion, that the first prediction did not take hold? Because heavens knows he's had a lot of problems.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Republican majority refuses to take any action or really even much react to what he's doing. They're really running scared of him, and I think they're going to really pay for it in the midterm elections. I really believe they're going to have a massive tsunami against them, and it would be somewhat anyway because the party in the White House loses seats, but I think they're going to be really destroyed by this next election. Unless people don't pay attention and stay home, but it seems to me young people and minorities and women and suburbanites are really outraged more than ever, and I think they will come out, and the Republicans are going to suffer greatly, and I think that's why Paul Ryan chose to retire.
Now, when you first made your prediction, it was before the Comey firing.
It was in February, yes.
Yeah, before. All that. Why did you think the Republicans were going to react?
I really thought they would. I didn't think all of them would, but I really thought enough of them would that there would be a move to indeed oust him, because as I've written on my Progressive Professor blog, Mike Pence really is more to their liking. He's really more one of them. I mean, this is not, for me, a progressive, a happy thought to have Mike Pence in the White House, but he certainly is more of a hardline conservative and much more of interest to those who are for the religious right, and yet everybody's backing Trump. Very few are speaking out, and even the ones who doesn't speak out, then back away. Like Bob Cork has backed away, and you know, and Jeff Flake, while not backing away, really goes along with a lot of things. He talks a lot. They both talk a lot, but they don't do much. Now, John Kasich outside has spoken up. Ben Sasse in the Senate has spoken up a bit. But even a person like Rand Paul changes his mind, and Marco Rubio changes his mind on nominations and so many other things, and it's just so exasperating. And I think the Republican Party is going to suffer historically for this.
When our governor leaves office next January, where do you think he'll go?
He's going to announce for president, I really believe. I also think Ben Sasse will announce for president, and I think they are the two key figures to watch.
Will it be a problem if the Republicans do hold on to the Senate and the House in November?
A problem in what regard?
I think it'd be hard for a Governor Kasich to, after he leaves office next January, if the Republicans hold on to both branches of government to say, hey, our president is not good and I should be better in a primary than he is.
Well, I don't see that happening. At least the House of Representatives, I am certain, will flip. The average is usually 35, 40 seats for the party out of the White House to gain. And in this case, they only need 23 to gain control for the Democrats. The Senate will be harder, but now there are open seats in Tennessee, which is, I think, going to be a very tough race for Marsha Blackburn. Also, now Mississippi's having a second seat open, and after Doug Jones winning the seat in Alabama, I think it might be easier to win a seat in Mississippi. Ted Cruz has a major opponent in Beto O'Rourke in Texas, and apparently O'Rourke is right, you'll nip and tuck with him. I think the Nevada and Arizona seats have always been in danger. Now, I admit that the Democrats have a lot of seats they have to defend, but I think that they will be likely to be able to at least gain two seats and have a 51-seat majority.
Don't you think this will pose a bit of a problem for the Democrats if they do win back both branches of government? I don't think they would move right toward impeachment, because I think that if that's the first thing they do, I think people are going to look upon that badly.
Actually, I agree with you, and my oldest son David was talking to me this weekend when I mentioned about my article, and he said he hopes they don't move through it immediately. They have to come up with an agenda that they know will be vetoed by Trump, but come up with a real agenda of what they would do to change things in 2021 with a new Democratic president. And actually, it makes a lot of sense. There will be, of course, those who want to move to impeach, but the problem is to get removal will be nearly impossible unless we get real criminal indictments of Trump directly or his family, which I think could happen. But otherwise, it's going to be very difficult, it's true, to get him removed. While he could be impeached, he might not get removed because you need 67 votes, and even with 51 or 52 Democrats, it's going to be hard to get 15 Republicans to go along. So I think he makes a lot of sense, and they need to come up with a real agenda for the future and convince people that they need to not only have voted for them for the House and Senate, but to indeed kick Trump or Pence out of the White House in 2020.
Isn't President Trump's real problem here in New York? Because Mueller can just present the evidence, but New York can indict him.
Eric Schneiderman, yes, the state attorney general, yes, and that cannot be something that can be resolved by pardons. So, yes, there's a real problem there. So I think there's a good chance we will have Donald Trump indicted by the state of New York, if not, indeed, by the special counsel. That's a real nightmare for him, and he's going crazy over it.
Well,
it's obvious with the Michael Cohen story.
Well, if he is indicted in New York, what are the chances that people will let him run the government while he's on trial?
It's an unprecedented situation. I don't know how it would be handled. I honestly don't know. It's one of those scenarios that's very hard to imagine what would happen then. It might be, I would guess, that maybe we would have to have an acting president at the time, which would be Mike Pence, as if he was incapacitated the president physically or mentally and had to temporarily step down. But it wouldn't be necessarily resigning, but maybe an acting president. It's a very hard scenario to even imagine now. But we've come so far, I can't believe we've come this far, and still nothing has really changed as far as Trump leaving office, which shows we have a paralysis in our government.
You know, there are two things that strike me as odd, and we'll go through the first one here. Now, it's my understanding that Robert Mueller found something while he was doing the Russia investigation that did not relate to the Russia investigation, but it did relate to something that happened in New York that was illegal. Now, it's believed that it was so illegal that when the Attorney General of New York went to the court and said, we want to just go in and seize these offices, the federal court said, or the court in New York said, yes, you have the right to do that. Now, here is my question. If it's just about Michael Cohen, why was Mueller investigating? Why would that even come by him? Doesn't this have to do with Trump in some way?
Oh, I'm sure it does, and I'm sure it has to do with money laundering, if not Russian collusion, with money laundering with all of his various building projects around the world. I think that a lot of it has to do with his business background and the illegal activities I think he's been engaged in for many decades now.
Now, the other question is, there is talk of impeachment. There is talk of, obviously, a lot of people who know President Trump have been indicted or are about to be indicted. But yet the two people who are in line after Mike Pence, Paul Ryan and Orrin Hatch, are both leaving in November.
As of January 3rd, actually, yeah. It'll be, yes.
So why do you think they want out?
Well, Orrin Hatch is 84, and I think he just decided it's time to retire. And I think the way he's been communicating lately, I think it's clear that I think he's not quite all there anymore. I think he's really, I'm not trying to be funny, but I really think he's losing it somewhat. Paul Ryan, I think, is maybe somehow involved in this. You know, there is that meeting where Kevin McCarthy, who could be the next speaker, made a statement about Russian collusion, and Ryan said, shh, be quiet about that, and they all laughed nervously. So I wonder if even Mitch McConnell knows something about this. And remember, Elaine Chao, his wife, is, of course, in the Trump cabinet, so there could be a problem for Mitch McConnell as well, as far as knowing things that we do not yet know officially have occurred. But it's very worrisome that we could have a real group of people at the top who could be engaged in treason.
Well, we do know who President Trump is. We know how he operates, and some people like it, and some people don't like it. But is there really any chance in the world that Pence is going to be left? I mean, Pence joined this campaign prior to the convention. He was the head of the transition team that transitioned Michael Flynn right in there. Is there a chance in the world that he is just totally, what does he do? Garden? How could he be totally oblivious to everything that's going on?
Well, I watch him, his body language, he seems very grim in my mind, and I think, he's avoiding saying anything. I can't believe, independently of anything he's involved in, that he's happy with a lot of the stuff Trump has said and done. But I do think that he probably is engaged, engaged in this whole situation. But the question is, will it be found out before he becomes president, or will he become president and then he will be forced out? So I have said to some, we may have three presidents in this term, Trump, Pence, and someone else. And the question with Pence is, if he's inaugurated, he comes in, he can, of course, under the 25th Amendment, choose a new vice president, and that person could then become the president. And there was a story in the New York Times implying that that Pence was aligning with Nikki Haley, the U.N. ambassador, and they had a common person that they were going to have on both of their staffs until Trump found out and was furious about it, and so no longer is that going to happen. So I could see the possibility of Nikki Haley, who I think comes across as quite legitimate, as a possible vice president under a President Pence, and maybe a short time like Gerald Ford, and then becoming president for the rest of the term.
Yeah, what happened there with Nikki Haley last week with Larry Kudlow? He said she misunderstood, and she said, I don't misunderstand things.
That's exactly it. And believe me, she does not misunderstand. She's one of the only, I'd say, two really legitimate people around him. The other is James Mattis. The Secretary of Defense is very solid as well. Everybody else, I think I'm going to be writing an article on my blog, everybody else is either gone or suspect or is involved in inappropriate economic benefit from the job, you know, like Scott Pruitt, for instance, or Ryan Zinke as examples. And I think everybody is stained except right now Nikki Haley and James Mattis.
Don't you think, though, there is a general consensus in this country that we are tired of investigations that are causing people, costing the taxpayers dollars? I mean, we've got to investigate. Our speaker here in Ohio had to leave. We've had people had to resign their offices. Presidents under investigation. They want to launch a new investigation on Hillary and Comey and Loretta Lynch. Don't you think we're just sick of this?
I think there are many people sick of it, but it's interesting. It tends to be partisan. You know, when it's a Democrat in office, the Republicans don't care. And I guess maybe now it's a question of many Democrats not caring. But actually, remember, this investigation is being led by Republicans, by Mueller, by Comey, by Rosenstein. It's not Democrats that are doing this. And, of course, in the House and Senate, it is the different committees that are run by the Republicans. And the Senate committee certainly is very serious. The House committee, of course, made a disaster of themselves, under their leader, Devin Nunes. But the Senate committee is certainly very serious. So it is upsetting, but we need to know when there's corruption, and we have to weed it out. Unfortunately, there's a lot of it. We're in a new gilded age, like the late 19th century, and it's interesting. The New York Times in 1973 in the Watergate scandal had an editorial saying, a new gilded age? And it was, and now we're in another, I think, new gilded age of high-spread corruption.
But what in the end, Mueller's investigating Russian collusion, what in the end is the worst-case scenario? I mean, so many people have been indicted. We know that the Russians did not want Hillary and they wanted Trump, and we know that they tried to do this. We know that Cambridge Analytica got information from Facebook. What more could there be in that particular case?
Well, I can't really say because I'm not involved in the investigation, but I think we need to thoroughly investigate it because we don't want this to happen again in 2020, and hopefully it will not be an effect on the midterm elections, which I'm very concerned about, that if the Republicans somehow keep control of both houses, we're going to have to wonder, is it for real or is it also manipulation by foreign influences? And it's going to make all our elections seem illegitimate to many, and it's going to undermine faith in our democratic system of government.
Yeah, but if the president is found that there was collusion, let's say he talked to the Russians, okay, that's the worst case scenario. He's probably not going to be taken out of office based on that. So what did all this time do? What was the point?
Well, but I think it's more than just Russian collusion. There's also his obstruction of justice that he's been involved in and is still involved in, I believe, his abuse of power, his violation of the Emoluments Clause, which is certainly clear that he's done, the corruption of many of his cabinet members and his own children, the Stormy Daniels scandal, and all the business dealings of Trump in New York State. It's not just Russian collusion. This is a man with many different scandals, and I think they do affect the office and the ability to get government to work properly. And, of course, he's also undermined, I'm going to be writing about this soon, about the fact that he's undermined our government bureaucracy, the State Department, the Interior Department, and also the Health and Human Services Department and the Education Department. Yeah, so many positions are unfilled, and many bureaucrats are leaving or being forced out, and this undermines our whole ability to run our government, including particularly in foreign affairs, but also in domestic affairs.
But isn't his story going to be, they were out to get me from day one?
Well, that's what he'll say, yes. Well,
they couldn't beat me at the ballot box, so they were out to get me from day one.
Well, actually, they did beat him at the ballot box by 2.85 million votes, the biggest margin ever of a person who won the popular vote but did not get elected president because of our antiquated electoral college system.
But that's how we'll elect him. And the truth is, that will be his story. No matter what comes out of this Mueller investigation, the story will be, I beat their candidate, and they were mad at me from day one, and this is what they have thrown at me.
Well, that's true, but again, Trump has lied so often that anybody who has any common sense will see it's just a bull story. That's all it is.
Yeah, but isn't that the trouble, though, that the FBI director going on all these television shows, that doesn't look good.
No, I would think that he should have held up writing his book till later. I do agree, and I think that does undermine his credibility. But, on the other hand, it is clear that that Trump was trying to get him to stop the investigation of Michael Flynn. It's very clear, and that is obviously obstruction of justice.
But nothing's being done.
Nothing being done by Congress, no, it's true at this point. But I really feel that he will resign because I believe his children will be indicted, and I think he might himself, and that he'll make a deal to try to save them, and that he will agree to resign. That's what I think. And maybe Mike Pence will give him a pardon, which will harm him if he gets to be president, at least for a short while. But Gerald Ford did it, so I think it's very likely Mike Pence would do that for him.
But didn't Gerald Ford do it because it, I mean, when you look at the whole Nixon situation, I know people compare it, but the truth of the matter is, what Nixon did, there was no chance in the world the Democrats were going to win in 1972.
No, against George McGovern, you're right.
And there is still no evidence that Nixon ordered the break-in. He ordered the cover-up, but there was no proof that he ordered the break-in.
That is true, yes.
So, I mean, I don't even see why these two situations parallel each other, except that it was an obstruction of justice.
And abuse of power,
and
yeah.
Abuse. But the Trump situation...
It's far worse, I think.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know that pardons would be handed out.
They should not be, but they could be, that's what I'm saying. And of course, Pence would do that. He would. I think it would guarantee he would not be elected and maybe not even nominated in 2020. It's hard to say. Although sitting presidents have always been nominated. The last time a sitting president was not nominated who wanted it was Chester Alan Arthur in 1884. So I would assume that the sitting president would be nominated. And even that couldn't even be Trump. If he's still around, he probably would be nominated. But I assume would have a primary challenge. And every time there's a primary challenge, as happened with William Howard Taft in 1912, with Jimmy Carter in 1980, with Gerald Ford in 1976, and George H.W. Bush in 1992, they won the nomination, but then they lost the election.
You know, though, when I look at the whole Russian collusion thing, which would be the thing, because we know about obstruction of justice, we know about Stormy Daniels, we know about all that already. So my question is that when we look at President Trump, and if Ivanka knew, if Jared Kushner knew, if Flynn knew, if Manafort knew, if Cohen
knew,
yeah, Cohen knew, Gates knew, is there any chance Mike Pence didn't know?
I would think he does know, yes, and I think he is flawed. But the question is whether they can show that for certain and whether that can prevent him from succeeding.
Well, my guess would be he would go first. I can't say that for sure, but my guess would be he would go before the kids and he would go before Trump. But that leads us to November because timing is everything. And if the Democrats do get back the House, as far as I know so far, you have Speaker of the House Pelosi.
Yes.
And the Democrats have a far different feeling about this election, at least the Democratic National Committee, with them suing President Trump.
And yes, they do. And the thought that we could have a woman president named Nancy Pelosi, I think, would blow the minds of Republicans who didn't want Hillary Clinton, but I think they would want even less Nancy Pelosi as president of the United States.
But what is the point of this lawsuit from the Democratic National Committee? I mean, they win it. What do they win?
Well, I think it's partly propaganda. You got to remember the Democratic National Committee sued Richard Nixon and won a settlement in 1974. People don't realize that. They sued for $1 million. They got $750,000, sounds so little now, $750,000. So I think it is partly for propaganda to make a point and possibly for financial damages for what happened.
Don't you think the underlying reason, though, there is they want some of this information uncovered now before the election?
Well, of course they do. Obviously, they would. But I must say, your comment there about that you think Pence would go before Trump, then that would mean Trump would have the capacity to replace him as vice president under the 25th Amendment, and that would really be an interesting scenario. Who would he pick to be his new vice president? I don't think it would be Nikki Haley. I don't know who it would be, but that could become a real problem as far as getting a major. I guess getting a majority of each house to back it after hearings, and if it happens before January, likely he would get whoever he wanted because the Republicans have no spine.
Now, you have said that you think a way to win the presidency for the Democrats is Joe Biden and Sherrod Brown.
Yes, because Sherrod Brown, I think if he had been the running mate of Hillary Clinton, I think Ohio might have been won, and maybe Wisconsin and Michigan, because Brown appeals to the white working class of the Midwest, yes.
But don't you think there is a question here about age?
Well, yes, you know, certainly for Joe Biden, who will be 78. In the case of Sherrod Brown, he'll be, I think, 68 in 2020. But on the other hand, Trump's in his 70s, and we have Bernie Sanders talking about running. We have Elizabeth Warren, who will be 71 in 2020, thinking about running. So, I mean, it is a problem. That's why another scenario is, as people say, the Joe-Joe ticket. Joe Biden and Joe Kennedy would be 38 years apart, 78 and 40. But I'm not sure that Joe Kennedy, who's in the House, who's the grandson of Robert Kennedy, would be ready for that. But that's what some people find very appealing.
What do you make of the idea that there's a new book, I believe, out today, Chasing Hillary, by a New York Times reporter? And she, who had access to the Clinton campaign, said on election night that there wasn't this breaking of a television, there wasn't this big sad moment with Hillary. When they told her, when I guess Robbie Mook told her that she did not win, that there was no way to do it, she said, "I knew they'd never let me win."
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yes, well, I think the issue of a woman president is still a problem. In 2020, it'll be 100 years since the 19th Amendment. And I have a feeling maybe there still would be a problem for any woman on either side to win the presidency anytime soon, because we do have a lot of misogyny out there.
Do you really think Hillary Clinton was shocked? I mean, she was the one who had to go through the investigation for 15 months. She was the one who had to have the case reopened 10 days before the election. She's the one who had to see Bill's mistresses show up at a debate. Do you really think she was all that shocked on election night?
It's hard to know. I wasn't there, obviously. I think she was a bit stunned somehow, because I think she wanted to believe, even though she was concerned about what Comey had done, that she still had the edge, because most public opinion polls showed her ahead. Now it makes it harder to believe any public opinion poll after this event.
What do you make of the picture at Barbara Bush's funeral with all the living presidents except Carter, and all the living first ladies except Mrs. Bush?
And Mrs. Carter.
And Mrs. Carter, excuse me. Yes.
Well, I mean, first of all, I thought, although I understand they were posing, to smile at a funeral was a little strange, I thought. I don't think I've ever seen that before. They could have had a more, you know, serious look. But I think it looked to me like Melania was having a great time talking, not only in that moment, but apparently talking with Barack and Michelle Obama and the Clintons, particularly with the Obamas. And I'm sure, knowing Donald Trump, it infuriated her that the two families he seems to hate the most, the Obamas and the Clintons, that she was socializing with. I'm certain of that. But she seemed very happy and relaxed. And honestly, she doesn't look very happy in public, even today with the French president. She seems so grim-looking at an event like that, you know, the welcome of President Macron to the White House. I don't think she's a very happy camper.
I thought the interesting part of that picture was George W. Bush with his arms around Hillary Clinton and Laura Bush.
Yes.
You know,
well, the Bushes and the Clintons really did link after the bit of 1992, election, and after George W. Bush won. And they come across, those families, the Bushes come across as a very decent family. And, you know, you may not like what George W. Bush stood for, but it's hard not to like him as a human being.
But at the time, it was pretty nasty against George W. Bush. Not the father. The father didn't receive that kind of nasty press. But, boy, George W. Bush after Hurricane Katrina.
Yes.
Ooh, there was some nasty stuff flying around there.
Well, we tend to forget things over time, don't we, to some extent. We have to be reminded of that.
Guantanamo Bay.
Yes.
There was a lot of stuff in those days.
Yes. No, there's no question that George W. Bush had a very controversial presidency. But as many people have said, compared to Donald Trump in his first 15 months, it seems better. Everything is relative. It's just like Nixon looks better. Andrew Johnson and James Buchanan look better. I want to point out this political scientist survey that came out a month or two ago, including Trump. He's rated as 44th out of 44 of all presidents, except by Republicans, who put him 40th, and conservatives in the group who put him at 40th. But all the other people in the group rated him 44th, below Buchanan and Andrew Johnson. And I don't think, 40th might be the highest he reaches, you know, it depends on the mix of the people, but he's really very poorly rated after 1 year in the White House.
It's kind of interesting because we do have this governor's race going on here in Ohio, and Dennis Kucinich is in there. And we found out last week that he had given a speech, a paid speech, when he was not running for anything, for a pro-Syrian group. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm not a big Dennis Kucinich fan. I thought he was always a flaky guy. He was mayor of Cleveland when he was, I think he was 31. He was a boy wonder, and he almost got kicked out of office. There was a special election to keep him in office, you know, to see if he could be withdrawn from office, forced to resign. You know, when he was running for president in 2004, he claimed he saw an unidentified flying object, which I thought was strange because he didn't really give any details on it. He seems, you know, always has seemed to be on the left side, but lately he has worked on Fox News Channel and has been supportive quite a bit of Donald Trump, more than I would have expected from him. And I think that he is not the right person for the Democrats to nominate. I think Richard Cordray, the former head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is the right person to be nominated. I don't think Kucinich could win the state, and I think he is a flaky guy.
What if he does get the nomination? Because the NRA thing has hurt Cordray, I think, a bit.
Well, I don't know. I don't live in Ohio. I would have a tough time voting for him. That's all I can say. But I suppose, since I doubt, I don't know who's the Republican nominee going to be. We're not sure, right, at this point.
Well, it looks pretty good. Like it's going to be Mike DeWine.
Well, he was a former senator. I don't know. I'd have to. Of course, I don't vote in Ohio, but I'd have to look at both. Mike DeWine, I guess, is a fairly centrist conservative. I don't know. He might actually win against Kucinich. But I do think Cordray would be the best choice as an outsider in Florida, saying what I think about Ohio.
Do you think that the Republicans will embrace John Kasich when he's out of office?
Well, I think a lot depends on what happens to Trump between now and then. I think Kasich has a lot of people who really think he's a good person and very qualified to be president, and I agree. I'm not sure I'd vote for him. I doubt I would vote for him, but I would certainly, I've said that if he had been the nominee in 16, I would have felt a lot better. Actually, I always said the best race in 16 would have been Joe Biden against John Kasich, and either one, I think, would have had a really good race there, but of course it didn't happen. It will depend. I think, you know, it depends on what happens to the midterm elections, I guess, and what happens to Trump, and we'll have to discuss that in future interviews when we see what's going on.
Well, it's interesting to me because Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are both younger than John Kasich, and they both got more delegates than John Kasich. Are they just going to go away?
Well, I hope Ted Cruz is defeated in Texas by Beto O'Rourke. It's a very close race. I actually found, it might be surprising to you, that when I looked at all the people in 16 before we knew how Trump would be as president, I actually thought Cruz would have been a worse choice than Trump. Imagine that. I'm not so sure now I would say that, but I think Cruz is terrible. As far as Rubio, I think he is a lightweight. I don't think he's very bright. I don't think he's very smart. I don't think he's qualified to be president. He looks good. I mean, looks help, you know, but I really do not think Rubio would be, except that he's from Florida, of course, which is the third largest state. But I think Kasich is a much more substantial candidate than either of them and much more palatable.
But isn't that the problem, though? When we look at the candidates preceding President Trump, we had Mitt Romney, we had John McCain, we had George W. Bush, Bob Dole. But let's look at the two that didn't win, John McCain and Mitt Romney. Now,
and Bob Dole, yeah.
Yeah, okay, but in today's world, we're talking post-President Obama. So here's the problem. Mitt Romney and John McCain can't win elections because they are true Republicans, and the outlay of this country, they have trouble winning in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. The reason Trump won those areas was because he wasn't a traditional Republican.
Well, I also think there's more evidence that in Michigan and Wisconsin that there was manipulation of the vote. We're getting more information about that. I'm not so sure with such small margins like 10,000 and 22,000 that the results are really legitimate. So I'm not sure he did win it, but officially he did win it, yes.
Well, if it's an illegitimate vote, if that's truly what Mueller finds, that this was an illegitimate election, that's different than obstruction of justice. That's different than collusion. That's a whole different thing, and I don't think this country's ever been faced with an illegitimate election.
Well, actually, I would say, if you go back to 1876, there was a big debate about how Rutherford Hayes of Ohio was chosen over Samuel Tilden by the Special Electoral Commission. It's very much debated. I think there's still people who debate the 2000 election in Florida and how it was awarded to George W. Bush by a Republican majority Supreme Court that stopped the vote count.
Right.
So I'm not, and even 1960 with John F. Kennedy over Richard Nixon, there were many people who thought that was fixed in Texas and Illinois, but it was allowed to finish the process. So we've had contested elections before.
But we've never had an investigation prove that.
That is true, yes.
I'm saying if the investigation proves it's an illegitimate election, and I assume this Mueller is concise, if that's true that the vote counts were tampered with in those states, what does that mean?
I don't know, because like you brought up earlier, we're not going to suddenly put Hillary Clinton in the White House in the middle of the term. It's not going to happen. Legally, Trump was chosen by the Electoral College and counted by Vice President Joe Biden before a joint session of Congress in January of 2017. It just means it would have to be handed on to the next in line of succession who is able to be inaugurated without question, I don't know who it would be right now. It's a real problem.
Well, see, here's the problem with that scenario. I think that's the only scenario that you would see Hillary Clinton get put in. Because I think if Mueller finds out that the votes were tampered with, that she actually did win those states, then I think you would have to say that the electors cast their ballots under false pretension, and Joe Biden accepted those under false pretension, because I think that's different. That's different than obstruction of justice. That's different than collusion with Russia, because those are things that we found out after the election, and we can't really say that changed a vote. But if we find out that votes were tampered with, that predates the election night, and that's a whole different ball of wax.
Yes, but I still cannot imagine a scenario where suddenly they would have an inauguration ceremony for the person who was declared the loser.
I don't see it as a movie.
I don't see it as reality.
I'll tell you, it's interesting because if you have a mayor, just in a microcosm, if you have a mayor of a city and the mayor decides to leave in the middle of their term, usually most cities allow that mayor to pick their replacement for the remainder of their term, approved by city council. But that's on their own fruition, leaving. Then that's the order of operation. But if we found that the mayor's people had tampered with the vote, and that's why we're getting rid of him, they would just hold the election over, or they would look at what truly was cast.
Holding the election over would be hard to even imagine how they would organize that, and what would happen in the interim when they decided it was a corrupt election until the actual election. I don't know what would happen. Who would take over? Who would be running the government?
Well, I think Trump would stay for now, because I think you would have to figure, because I think it'll all come down in a report, and the report will say, did they tamper with votes? And if they tampered with votes, then you're going to have to say, well, now wait a second. The way our system's set up, Hillary Clinton did win that election. So everything that was done after that November date was done under false pretense. So I don't think you would hold the election. I don't think everybody would go to the ballot box again. I think what would happen is Donald Trump would be found of doing an illegal activity. So either he would be removed or he would leave, and the electors just in those states, not the voters, would recast their electoral votes the way they were supposed to. Because that's the deal. The electors are supposed to cast their votes based upon the popular vote. And if they did that under fraudulent circumstances, I think they would be allowed to change them.
Well, can you imagine the day they would say Trump did not win, he has to leave office, how he would react to it and how he would conduct himself and they would tell he has to resign by a certain date? I think, knowing him, he's so unstable, he could declare martial law and suspend the Constitution.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting, though. Did you see the stories over the weekend about cops getting ready with riot gear if he fires Mueller? There's something there that he is really, really petrified of. And if it was just a, if it's just, we know that the Russians interfered. We already know that. 13 Russians have been indicted. We know that his people had contact. His people have been indicted. People are flipping. if voting machines were tampered, that was always the big thing. If that happened, and with all this Facebook testimony and Cambridge Analytica and Jared Kushner's ties there, I don't think that voter tampering is so far-fetched anymore.
No, I don't either. But the problem is, how are you going to get Donald Trump to say, I'm leaving? I don't see him doing it. I see him, unless he's dragged out, as people have sometimes joked, you know, by Secret Service or something, I don't see him leaving. And he could suddenly go berserk and try to declare martial law and suspend the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. I think it's in danger as it is anyway.
But don't you think Congress and Senate would wake up during that point and do something?
I would hope so, but I'm not sure that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and Orrin Hatch and others, enough of them would, I mean, because so far they have no spine, and we've seen that, and I don't think they're going to look good in history when it's all over, and I think they're destroying a great political party that has had great leaders in the Congress, great leaders in the White House, the party of Lincoln, the party of Theodore Roosevelt, the party of Dwight D. Eisenhower, the party of Ronald Reagan, even of George H.W. Bush, Gerald Ford, and others, plus many senators and House members, as I've said, and governors. And I think they're really destroying a political party that has been with us since 1854. And I think the historic leaders, of course, in heaven, I hope they all are shaking their head and saying, what is going on? I mean, I cannot imagine any of these presidents I mentioned being happy or being willing to accept what's been happening with Donald Trump.
Yeah, but if I were Paul Ryan, or if I were Orrin Hatch, or if I were John McCain, or if I were Flake, or if I were Kasich, and I truly don't like the president, isn't my best case scenario for saving the party that that happens? Because if that happens, then we can say, we got rid of the guy. He did something wrong. Now, if you get Hillary Clinton in there because of election tampering, and you say, well, that election was fraudulent, it wouldn't even have to be in 50 states. You just get the electors from Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania to cast their ballots as they should have. You put her in office, you have a good chance of getting a Kasich, a Pence, because then you could start calling her an illegitimate president.
That's the problem. You know, I was thinking if Hillary had won, there would have been probably investigations in different ways about her. I think we're in such tumultuous times, it would have been different, but there would have been, I'm sure, investigations by the Republican Congress of the Democratic president, as they did under Obama, as they did under Clinton's husband, and under Carter. This just seems to be part of the equation now. So when people are disgusted, it's both sides do that, but particularly Republicans are really excellent at having how many different investigations about Benghazi? I think 11 of them, and not proving anything but wasting a lot of money.
Well, and she's a super PAC. We shouldn't forget that. She does have some money laid away.
That's true. You're right. Yeah.
There you go. What do you think of this country right now? I tell you, it's still a great country, best country to live in.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
But we obviously have some issues here, and we don't look very good to other countries right now because of them. Is there any way to calm down and just let this guy be president and let this investigation go on? I don't know why the news channels have to cover him 24 hours a day.
Well, I could argue that the job of the news media, both TV and radio and newsprint, is to investigate and make us aware. Remember, the Washington Post is what opens up the Watergate scandal. And it's the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and CNN and MSNBC and others like that that are exposing reality. And I think that while it does cause tumult, a lot of it is caused by Trump's Twitter feed. And if he didn't do that as much, I think he feeds on it and gets more attention and wants the attention. He doesn't like the attention, but he does like the attention. It's like on both sides of the issue.
Well, I guess I don't misunderstand. I think the media should report when information becomes available, but I don't need to see
every day.
Yeah, well, but they rehash it over and over and over and over.
Because not everybody's watching or reading all the time. That's why, I would argue.
Well, we got to do something about that, because that's one of the major problems. I mean, you cannot turn on. When that Stormy Daniels interview was going on, I mean, they ran it 5 times.
Well, because it involves sex, that's why.
How many times do we have to hear that Michael Cohen's office was raided? I know it was raided. I understand. Now, unless there's some more evidence, let's leave it at that, and let's see what happens.
Well, one thing you got to remember, you and I and many others are informed all the time. A lot of people don't pay attention, and that's why they need to repeat for those who only listen occasionally, because everybody is not tuned in. A lot of people are quite unaware of what's going on. I found that with people I've spoken to and students I've had. They're not all paying attention.
Yeah, but if you're watching MSNBC at 3 o'clock, do you really need to rerun that at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10? If you weren't watching at 3, you're not watching at 7, 9, 10. And if you didn't hear about it through the internet or anywhere else, I just think the news, I like a story that moves. I'm okay with a story that moves. But some of these stories don't move. They're day stories, and they're reported all weekend. Last week was all Comey all week. And
well, because of his lectures, of his speaking tour, that's why.
Right,
yeah.
But it was the same story. Just I that's enough. I mean, and I think that's one of the real gripes that the public has against the media here. Media should report. If it's good or bad toward Trump, that's not the point. You should report the facts, but not all the time. For goodness sakes, run something else. What is going on in North Korea? What's going on in Russia? What's going on with the environment? Don't they have anything else to report on?
The environment particularly we need to deal with, because Scott Pruitt and Ryan Zinke are really doing damage, and my oldest son David is with the Conservation Lands Foundation fighting the government on the national monuments being cut back in Utah. So I agree on that, certainly. There certainly is a need for more. But Fox News Channel on the other side keeps on harping as well. So it's not just one side, it's both sides.
Yeah, but if you say Fox News is illegitimate, then they're going to shoot back at you and say you're illegitimate. And the more you harp on this, it looks that way. I remember when CNN used to cover news. You didn't have to. This has really become a big problem. And I'll tell you something that's very interesting. I do notice that almost all of the leaks, almost all of the stories about this president come from newspapers. The TV report them, but it's always leaked from the Washington Post.
And the New York Times.
Yeah, the New York Times.
Those two. They're the champions. They're the two best newspapers in the country. They've done a great job, I think.
So do people in Ohio read the New York Times every day?
Well, they can read it online. They don't read it in print, but it's online and it's on Facebook and everywhere else.
Well,
they should, certainly, yeah.
Right, but that's the conundrum here. I will bet CNN tonight will have a story from the Washington Post that
was
leaked
about
Trump, and they will talk about that for an hour with five different people. That's
including both sides, though. They'll have people on both sides of the issue. That you have to admit they do.
Right, but that's the problem I have. I think just say what they find and then move on to something else. Why do we... These pundits, oh my God. I mean, it's clear they don't like the guy. And then you got the one guy there who does like Trump, who they beat up on for 45 minutes.
Yes, but you got to remember, politics is theater. You got to remember that.
It is. And Dr. Feinman, it is always fun to talk with you. It's always
a
pleasure.
Great time. Thank you very much again, Scott, for inviting me.
Thank you, Doctor. We'll be back with more program right after this.
1783.